are you, Hava?
Eccle. I'm fine. I'm sleepy. I didn't sleep very well last night. So that's taking up with all the bandwidth in the how am I station. Let me see. I know I've got more in here. What other things are going on in my life? How am I truly? I'm good. I have been just sitting around today. Is Purim thinking about, I don't know, how I wish I were doing more Purim things. I'm planning to go to a local Purim thing this evening, but just thinking about like years past where I was doing this huge spiel and it felt like a real fucking event, but for very reasonable reasons, sort of the social fabric of at least my friend group, and I imagine many other people's friend groups, has been sort of like permanently altered by COVID. I just like haven't gotten back to that place. Yeah, IDK. I developed COVID misanthropy and never recovered.
Yeah, same. But yeah, it's a blessing and a curse.
A blurse.
Yeah. There's lots of things from COVID that maybe I've shed that's not so good too, in addition to all the good stuff.
Oh, right. Like things that are not so good, therefore it's good to shed them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also like maybe things would be different if I didn't spend 90% of my time doing Jewish things on the internet. Maybe I would have a different relationship to local Jewish events. IDK. Life is complicated, it turns out. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
There's going to be a new puppy in my house. Not my new puppy. My future mother-in-law is getting a new puppy this weekend.
Oh my God.
So it's going to be a puppy party over here, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow, you guys are going to go on like mother-in-law, daughter-in-law puppy walks together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm hoping this puppy and my puppy will get along and be best friends and hang out all the time.
Oh, that'll be so good.
I think my dog needs more other dog exposure. But the problem is he really only does well with other dogs in a sort of unlimited environment, like in a dog park where he can sort of like run around and get the excited energy out. When there are leashes involved, he just sort of like, there's no, like the confinement like escalates the situation.
Leash aggression, that's like a thing, right? The dog's
is
on
that
a leash.
Thing?
Yeah,
it's not that he is aggressive, it's that he wants to play with every dog that he sees, but his way of playing is running around, and then he tries to run around and then he gets caught, like the leash stops him, and he just sort of like spirals into just freaking out.
Oh, okay.
It's not like he's like, I gotta go bite that other dog. He's like, I need to sniff that butt. Now, yeah. He just like doesn't know how to deal with not being able to do that. Anyway, how are you, Michael?
I'm fine. I discovered a song that's new to me.
Oh.
Old to the world.
What song?
It's called Slow Song. And
okay.
I think it's by these two like producer type, the Knox, this duo. And the singer is Dragonette, so it's like it's one of those, you know, two artists, one song kind of situation.
Yeah, I don't know any of these characters.
I think you should listen and watch the music video. I think the music video is very striking as well.
Yeah, it's starting with a great makeup montage.
Oh, yeah. Are you listening? Can you actually hear it in your headphones?
Yeah. Because my whole PC sound comes through here.
Yeah. Just listen to it. Just groove to it.
Yeah, you go. You're a working girl.
Yeah.
Go out on the town.
Yeah. You got it. I thought you'd like it. And, you know, it's got that disco pop dance groove.
Yeah, disco revival.
Which I love. I kind of like wish that I could be like okay. The music video features a drag queen, right?
Yeah.
And I just wish I could pull that shit off sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
I want to hang out with drag queens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I want to surround myself with them.
Well, no offense to the drag queens in my life, particularly one who is a dear, you know, beloved friend of the show, Binya, but in my experience, hanging out with drag queens has been 90% awful. So.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I'll say 80% awful because I used to work with a drag queen who was also really fun. We worked at Starbucks together. I guess my time pre-transition, just like as a tiny gay baby trying to navigate the world, getting emotionally annihilated by the drag queens in my life was a challenge. But also there was like this whole, okay, this is like a whole fucking conversation, but in the prime Tumblr era, there was like this whole backlash against drag where it was very in to be out with drag, to hate on drag for various reasons. Some people were like drag is misogyny. Some people were like drag is transphobic. You know, a lot of takes were going around and we didn't have the technology to know what were bad takes back then. So just anyone with a take could say anything. We hadn't invented, you know, the precise take measuring technology we have today. So now I've sort of like, because I participated in that bad take gate, I have sort of decided to reactively become slightly pro drag queen as sort of a corrective measure.
That's very interesting. And
other people probably just have feelings and make decisions.
Yeah. You're like,
without playing 4D chess against their past selves, but not me.
Yeah. I think you can just like drag queens if, you know.
No, not Michael. You can't just like things or not like things for your own reasons. You have to have an elaborate rationale that makes it morally good to like or dislike.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is the major criticism of the left. Like, we just aren't able to handle aesthetics, you know.
Right. Don't know how to have fun.
You don't know how to have fun. Well, I want to have fun, and I wish I could have fun like that, but I don't think I was born that way, as some people have said.
As they say.
Yeah, but you know, that was a good thing. Some apple trees came in the mail for me.
Ooh, bare root.
Bare root.
Naked roots.
Like the roots are exposed, you mean?
Yeah.
I got 5 little fucking sapling apple trees I'm going to put in the ground sometime.
Cute.
Yeah, so very exciting.
Yeah, that apple is exciting news. I'm going to eat those apples.
Yeah, in like 3 years, you know?
Yeah, I'll be around. We'll probably still be here on episode 600.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Today on the Talmud, the letter Gimel. We'll have just be going through the alphabet by that point.
Yeah. Also, your blanket, you got to share. You got to put a picture of your blanket.
Oh, yeah. I love this blanket for a variety of reasons.
Just, you got to post it. I won't even describe it. Just post it.
It is a crochet blanket made out of beautiful crochet squares handed down to me by my future mother-in-law. They were actually going to throw it away. It's incredibly like plush, which is a quality that crochet blankets don't always have. So I snatched it immediately. But then immediately afterwards, I realized how much it is covered in buttholes, crochet squares look like buttholes. And that made me love it even more.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't look away. Although sometimes I think they look like buttholes, but they also look like little tardigrade faces, like little water bears.
Oh, yeah, little water bears, which are the smallest butthole.
Right, the smallest butthole in the universe.
Another thing I forgot to mention. I met a listener in the wild.
Speaking of small buttholes.
No, I don't know anything about this listener. Unrelated.
Tell us more. Tell us all. I'm sure the listener is listening.
They came up to me at a contra dance I was playing.
And they said, "You look Jewish. Are you the Michael Sokolovsky?"
Something to that effect. And I was like, "Yeah, you're a listener." And they're like, "Oh yeah, aww. I've been listening since the beginning." And then we were gonna talk about like, "Oh, what's the Jew stuff that's going down in the town?" You know.
But then they
disappeared. So
wow.
But anyway, it was good to meet you, listener. I'm glad that people listen, you know. And
yeah,
I hope
thanks for listening.
I hope you enjoy it.
At least somebody's listening.
Yeah, I don't know who that was directed at.
Nobody. It was just like a humorous passive aggression. It had no specific target, or did it?
To God.
yeah, definitely to God is always, in any passive aggression, God is always included.
Well, that's kind of related to what I'm going to bring, actually.
Great.
A little bit. It'll take a bit to get there, and it's not the main point, but there's like a little bit of a interesting take that will come up related to reacting
take
to God.
Take us on a journey.
Okay, for reasons I won't go into on this pod, I had a very upsetting event happen to me this week that made me feel a lot of anger. So I looked up what do Jews have to say about the anger, about anger.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
What do Jews have to say about anger? There's so much they have to say about anger. There's so many ways to talk about anger.
Right.
I'm going to bring just two tiny little ways of thinking about anger. But Hava, I wanted to give you the opportunity to first share what your off the dome anger Jew takes are.
Oh, well, I think we did. We included at least one or two texts about anger in an episode a while ago, because I remember reading some text about not letting your anger control you. Off the dome, like even just recently on the pod, I feel like we've covered a lot of cases of the rabbis really letting their anger get out of control, like Shimon Bar Yochai setting the fields on fire, and then his son turning someone into a pile of bones, and then his son arresting someone and getting them executed on false charges in a fit of pique. You know, ladies, don't you hate it when you denounce someone to the imperial authorities in a fit of pique, but then regret it, but it's too late?
Yeah, that sucks.
Gal problems. So honestly, like my initial Jew take coming in is like the rabbis were like not, seems like at least a significant proportion of them were not really on top of it anger wise.
Yeah, yeah. But there's like a do as I say, not as I do kind of phenomenon I've noticed at least.
I just feel like anger is one of those cases where it's like, I mean, unless their teaching is turn people into a pile of bones whenever you want. If their teaching is anything about controlling or moderating your anger, but they can't fucking do it, then it's sort of like the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, that is very depressing. It did not, seeing those takes and being aware of those takes prior to even going into this particular week's journey of anger, mm-hmm. did not alleviate the anger that I felt.
Yeah.
The injustice perpetrated against me. You know, right, you know how it goes. Right. But I did find some stuff that's the opposite of what the rabbis have done in some of those examples.
Ooh. Ooh.
One of the things that's real old is how Moses convinces God to not totally destroy the Israelites for the golden calf thing.
Right. Moses is like, don't, you've already put a bunch of work into the Jews. You don't want to start all over at this point.
And that's kind of cool. And you know, we're made in the image of God. Maybe God's flawed. I've also heard things like, I am a jealous God. That there's kind of two different conceptions of God that I'm playing with in my mind. It's like one is like, oh, we're made in the image of God, so maybe God is imperfect, you know, the universal life force that is imperfect and is trying to do good, you know,
mm-hmm.
but fails sometimes. And then there's this other version of God, which is like God is allowed to have certain emotions that are inappropriate for people to have. Like,
oh,
God is a jealous God.
Yeah, right.
And God's allowed to be jealous because God is God and God can deal with the jealousy. Or it's like but we're not allowed to have that particular emotion.
Yeah, like vengeance is the Lord's.
Right, right.
Classic example.
So just we can't do it, you know.
Right. I don't know about all that.
I don't know about that either. I don't know what I know, though. So that also gets in the way. But anyway, here's this quote from a rabbi. I don't know anything about them. Rabbi Mari Chernow. Moses takes the opportunity and convinces God to relent. Had that not been the case, Ki Tisa, which is the parsha that this story takes place in, might have been an illustration of the teaching of Orchot Tzadokim, which is, it is impossible for the angry one to escape great sin. And that of Abraham even Hasdai, anger begins with madness and ends with regret.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that God teeters just on the edge of both madness and regret. Must anger lead to regret as an emotion? No, but as a momentary justification for behavior we would not otherwise condone, perhaps. So, nice little quote from Rabbi Chernow.
Mm-hmm.
I do like this quote from Abraham Ibn Hasdai. Anger begins with madness and ends with regret.
Yeah, I will say that I'm pro-anger. Well, for myself, maybe one day I'll have so much self-esteem that this will stop being true. But in general, I tend to just sort of like self-blame and or like self-hate.
Yeah.
So whenever I get angry about something, it's like a sign that I am like caring about myself enough to sort of like stand, like get upset. I mean, I feel angry about things that happen to other people all the time. This is not really the kind of thing that I'm talking about. But for myself, like, once I'm able to get angry, it is usually like a very productive, like healthy place for me to go, because it means I'm sort of like breaking out of the muck and mire that I usually find myself in.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. But then there's what your therapist would then tell you is like, yeah, that's good, but it would be even better if you didn't have to get through your own muck to begin with, like if you were healthy enough, whatever.
That would be bad. I agree. Yeah. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about anger. I've been thinking a lot about it because on the one hand, I do agree with this quote that it can end with regret. It can do a lot of collateral damage that's not needed on other people, but also on yourself emotionally to brood in that stew of anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then there's also anger that's turned into action that actually changes the world. I don't think that every injustice should be ignored in a stoic kind of way. It's almost ridiculous. It's like then nothing changes. So where that line is very strange.
Yeah. Give me more teachings.
You want more teachings?
Yeah, teachings.
Okay. All right. Are you getting bored of my teachings?
No, never. But also that was more just vibes, you know, which is fine. I'm just ready to inject a little more teachings into the discourse.
I'm going to bring kind of two sources and intermingle them. At least one of them references the other quite a bit, and they kind of blend together. There's this book called Sha'ar Ruach HaKodesh.
Okay, sounds great.
It's a book of Kabbalah by Chaim Vital, who was a Kabbalist in the 1500s to 1600s. And he was a student of Luria. So he, I believe it's actually his son who compiled these teachings of his father. One of the teachings in it is strategies of how to deal with anger. There's this idea, and this idea, I believe, also appears in Tanya, which was written by the first Reb of Chabad.
Okay.
And it's this idea that anger, when you get angry, that's a momentary belief that you have, that God doesn't run the world. And so you're angry at God. And so if you if you love God, right, and God controls the world and everything in it, and everything is for a reason, then when you're angry about circumstances in your life or at an injustice, then you're like momentarily angry at God. And so anger and idolatry are kind of linked. This is a link that's made, I believe, by Shneur Zalman, the Chabad Reb, in order to explain why in the Talmud there's passages where the rabbis say that like anger is a sin as bad as idolatry. So this is like a explanation of why there's this connection between anger and idolatry, and just generally speaks to this idea that anger is something that you should avoid, deal with in a way, not express actively, and that is one of the major through lines of anger that exist in Jewish literature, as far as I can tell.
Well, that is, I have a hard time with that.
I have a hard time with it too. I have a hard time with it too.
I see the passive aggression, like I see the connection now.
Yeah, I struggle with this too, because what about free will?
Yeah, also like maybe it's fine to be angry with God. I have a definition of belief in God that includes a variety of emotional states in relation to them, of which anger can be one. You know, I think it seems like this teaching is working in a framework where it's like only sort of perfect submission is the appropriate relationship to divinity, which is certainly one framework. But I don't know. I don't know if it's the one that I want to work with.
I hear you. I'm bringing like positive things, but as a feisty person, and you're a feisty person too, you know, it's hard to see these positive things and not be a little feisty about them.
Yeah, maybe this is a naive way to look at the Torah, but I feel like if God is allowed to destroy the world in a fit of pique, then like I'm allowed to be mad at God sometimes. like if it is true that God sometimes just like their emotions get the better of them and they like destroy all creation temporarily, then I'm gonna remember that.
Okay, one more little bit of stuff I want to bring. Little bit of gematria for you. So this Kabbalistic text, Sha'ar Ruach HaKodesh, its prescription for how to get rid of anger is to perform 151 fasts. And the reason you do that is because the word for anger in Hebrew is ka'as, kaf ayin samach, who the values of those letters add up to 150.
I see.
Plus one, because you count the word, apparently.
Right. Okay.
So that's why you do 151 fasts. Another thing that you can do is you go to the mikvah.
Kabbalists and Hasidim love to send you to the mikvah.
Because the numeric value for the word mikvah is also 151.
Right. I was rolling my eyes because it annoys me, because I would love to have a mikvah that is so available that I can just go there anytime I need, like,
yeah,
a little spiritual booster shot. But then I was thinking about how I do my mikvah for my Nida in the shower using a shower mikvah technique, which means that, like, my shower dissociation is, like, halachically sponsored by Chaim Vital. So shower dissociation is now a spiritual practice.
Oh my God, shower dissociation. I've never heard that before. Did you invent that? That
no, this is like a, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, someone on the internet said one time and it just sort of spread through the world.
Okay.
Because yeah, we all stand in the shower and sometimes you just need to stand in hot water and dissociate for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's true. Another fun, weird connection, which I don't really think is that strong, but in Song of Songs 6, verse 12, there's, I don't even know what's going on, but there's this person, probably one of the lovers in Song of Songs, who knows, that says, I descended into the Garden of Nuts.
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
You know, the Garden of Nuts.
The numerical value for the word Garden of, Ginat, Gimel Nun Tav, is 453, which is 3 times 151. So what?
These dudes were high, man. These dudes were high as hell.
But here's why this is interesting, according to the high dudes. Because the shell is the symbol of the sin, that it contains the divine light. So Garden of Nut, Garden of, has a gematrially significant value to the word for anger.
All right. And therefore, the shell which contains divine light is called the klipa, which is like the same word for like a nut shell, like the outside of like a pecan.
And we want to get rid of that shell because we want it all for ourselves. Get
right.
Us that.
I mean, we don't want to get rid of it. We want to redeem it. We want to transform it.
Right,
into
right. Right. Whatever. The point is,
whatever,
these guys
bullshit
were fucking insane.
They were out there, and I support it. I support it. It just is. It's hard with an emotion as like activating as anger. When it's about like cultivating compassion, it feels like, oh yeah, like that's nice. I'm happy to go to all kinds of weird textual places to do that. But then when it's like dealing with something that can be as painful and sometimes dangerous as anger, it's sort of like, I don't know if I'm ready to be multiplying words for this. And at the same time, I don't know, gematria, maybe I'm just, I'm too straight-laced for these kinds of practices.
I feel you, Hava. Like, I tried to find the stuff that would make me feel less angry, and it's making me more angry. It's making me so angry. I don't have a good, I don't know. I mean, I do know. We do know how to deal with anger in a healthy way. Let's be honest here. But God fucking damn it, you know?
We deal with it by making a podcast episode is clearly your actual answer to this question.
Yeah,
you
it
are
actually
processing
is
your
yeah
anger by yeah creating this podcast episode.
It actually, that's what's going on. It's the creative.
You're making art about it, which your therapist would say is probably a really healthy way of dealing with it.
That's true. It's true. Why can't the rabbis just say that? Well, here's the thing.
Can't the rabbis just have the knowledge of 21st century psychology?
I feel like if the rabbis were just like, we fucking just torch everything, we're fucking crazy, I'd be like, that's bad, but like, all right, well, like, you're...
But it's honest.
But, like, this condescending nonsense about, like, this kind of stoic-leaning condescending nonsense, that's... I'm not sure what to do with it.
Yeah, I only like the condescending nonsense that agrees with my pre-existing beliefs about
yes
emotions.
Yes, thank you.
We're all thinking it.
So this is, like, a frustrating text that I brought, and I don't know what to do with them. I don't know...
Yeah, I mean, this is immediately making me think of, like, you know, big thing, the big halachic reform that the rabbis undergo in the Talmud, right, is transitioning to a system of monetary payment for injury instead of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And they spend a lot of ink on sort of justifying that. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know how big of a deal an eye for an eye stuff is, but just like from the rabbis' perspectives of in the Talmud, they're sort of trying to imagine into being the society they want to see. You want to sort of like minimize the amount of interpersonal aggression and anger, probably, or at least mediate it so that those conflicts can be resolved with like minimal harm to people. That was all a long way of saying, like, another way for me to look at these teachings is they are reflecting what all of these teachers wish to be true, which is like they want people to be able to process their anger through Jewish practice. And they are trying to teach that into being. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's an unsuccessful project, but it is a more, for me, an easier to live with motivation than thinking of it as genuine condescension.
Yeah, 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 that's true.
IDK, we just got fucking ethics pilled by that whole When We Collide experience, and now all my reads of Talmud are just like ripoffs of that.
Maybe.
What are the virtues at stake here?
Oh, well, that's what I brought. That's what I brought, Hava.
I loved it. I, for one, was thrilled. I'm sorry that you had a shitty week, but I'm glad that you transmuted it into a podcast experience.
I attempt to.
The listeners are going to love it, I'm sure.
Hopefully.
Oh my gosh, so many yawns. How dare you make me yawn my own yawn? Okay, listeners, thanks for hanging out with us this very day. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting us, for helping us to continue what we do, which is to bring all this nonsense to you. And a belated happy Purim. I hope you had the Purim that you needed to have. And without further ado, Shavuot Tov.
Shavuot Tov.